SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and it is hour three. Plenty late getting to Steve Askin this morning, but I absolutely had to get Ashley Burness in because we delayed her from Monday to Tuesday, or from Tuesday to Wednesday, or whatever. Yeah, because Monday we weren't on, so delayed her from Tuesday to Wednesday, and one more day, and she wouldn't. I'm pretty confident she would not answer the phone the next time if I didn't get her her visit in. Steve Askin has got just enough time for us today before he has to cut out, but looking forward to Steve's thoughts about the Pennsylvania Derby in particular. Kind of a mixed bag group, and in addition to that, I'm anxious for his read on the comments that came out yesterday from Larry Best. And Jerry Hollendorfer had said the day before, or over the weekend, to Brad Free that Instagram wasn't going to run the rest of the year, and that owner Larry Best had made the call to, you know, kind of stop on him for now, and bring him back for his three-year-old season. They do have Roy Ayton, obviously, to go forward with. So I thought that some of those comments from Larry Best were quite interesting. And I also want to get Dr. Alday next week to address. I always want to use these opportunities to talk about two-year-old development, because the notion that going easy on two-year-olds somehow is going to benefit you long-term, that has been disproven for decades upon decades, maybe centuries. So I want to get some read from different perspectives on it for everybody. Steve Askin certainly, I'm sure, read those comments from Larry Best with interest. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, you've piqued my interest because I don't get to read Daily Racing Form stories, so I don't know exactly what he said.
Well, no, this was in Blood Horse. This was the Blood Horse story yesterday from Jeremy Ballin.
Oh, okay. Well, I was out mostly yesterday. I actually hadn't seen it.
You'll enjoy it, because it's right up your alley, or at least it's an area that you've talked about to some degree. And I don't know if Larry Best is trying to, create a new approach, but he said how he doesn't believe that the Triple Crown is essential to a horse's value, and that he's got a different method of, and we know that already based on how he's buying horses for seven figures. And he just says he's going to approach things somewhat differently, and he already has Roy Ayton that he can go forward with, but he wants to save Instagram for, you know, other things next year and beyond. And I don't know. To me, it's...
I'm looking at the story now.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. I guess if you're using Justify as a gauge, then Instagram is over-raced with two starts as a two-year-old. So he probably said, well, Justify can show up for the first time on February 18th. Two starts is plenty for a two-year-old, which is why we don't have any horses that any three-year-olds that any Derby winners that win after the Derby. Seven out of the last 10 Derby winners did not win a race after the Triple Crown, and five of those seven horses did not win a race after the Derby. You think it's a coincidence, or is it the fact that most of these horses have no foundation? So you put, and listen, a horse like Justify can win the Kentucky Derby, obviously, with very little racing. But with little foundation, good luck getting him past the Triple Crown. These horses need a foundation. In fact, I just mentioned in my last column, talking about the three stages of the Triple Crown preps. And the first stage, which basically doesn't even exist anymore, is the one that just ended, which is the two-year-olds that have run in two-year-old stakes races. You start looking at this. Horses in the past used to run in the Hopeful, in the Sapling. A lot of these races in Belmont had the Tremont, the Youthful, the Great American Stakes. They had so many stakes. You had the Flash, the Saratoga Special, the Sanford. A lot of the Derby winners. You go back. River Ridge, Secretariat, Seattle Slough. Well, that's still a firm, Spectacular Bid. You go back to the horses in the 70s, by the way, they all won two-year-old stakes races and sprint races before they got to the second stage, which is the mile, you know, the Champagne, Breeders' Futurity, Hollywood Futurity, and all those races. But the first stage doesn't exist anymore. It's like nobody, I try to rate the horses that we've seen so far, horses that have impressed me. And then, you know, maybe you'll get one of these horses around for the Derby. But I'll tell you one thing. These horses now, like Mucho and a few of the others that have been running in the in this two-year-old sprint stakes, if they do get to win the Kentucky Derby, those are the horses you're going to see after the Triple Crown. So if Larry Best doesn't care at all about the Triple Crown, I don't know what he's planning on for this horse after the Triple Crown with only two starts at two. What is he going to give him, like an 8-month layoff or something? I don't understand. I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, like he says in the quotes here, you know, he spends a lot of money on his horses now. He's buying million-dollar yearlings, which, by the way, somebody should tell him is usually a sucker bet. Give me the $200,000, $300,000 yearlings, and I'll match him against the one and $2 million yearlings, because you can count on one hand how many of those $1 million yearlings turn out to be, you know, top horses, Triple Crown horses, or anything of note. So you look at a horse like Taprit. I mean, Taprit costs a ton of money as a yearling. And they managed to get him to win the Belmont Stakes, and he can't win after that now. He just hasn't been able to maintain his form. So, yeah, I mean, once in a while, you're going to get $1 million yearling. You're going to get a good magic, and that's. I think that's the outlier. I mean, I don't think that's the norm. If you start looking at all these top two, top horses, by the way, they're all going to be $500,000 and less. Sometimes even less than 100,000. Yeah, good horse can come from anywhere, as we've proven over the years. But I don't understand his way of thinking. But it's his money and it's his horses. He can do what he wants. If he thinks that Rowayton is a Derby horse, good luck to him. He looks like a speed horse to me.
He may be hoping I think is thinking that it's Instagram that is the long term and the route potential. I think there's some debate on that.
Well, I don't know. He's an observer, by the way. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like he's bred to go the distance. So listen. Maybe when you have a horse like Into Mischief, if you don't want to get him too sharp as a 2-year old, maybe he feels. Listen, on one hand, you could say. You don't want a horse to do this much this quickly. If you're looking at him as a Triple Crown prospect, very rare that you're going to see a horse come out, break his maiden by 10 lengths, and then go into a stake and win that by 10 lengths. So maybe it's too much too soon. And the old expression, too fast to last. So I don't know what his intentions are with this horse, what his goals are with him. I don't know if it's if it's going to Triple Crown or if it's to wait until after the Triple Crown. You know, this may be a horse you might wind up seeing in the King's Bishop next year, or the Alan Jerkins, I should say. But we don't know. I mean, Into Mischief, as we know, as we've discussed, you know, year after year, he's an unbelievable stallion and probably the greatest find of a stallion. I mean, Spencer have just found the gold mine here. But he needs good stamina on the bottom to get him a distance. I'm not talking about this horse in particular. I'm talking about Into Mischiefs in general. You want to see a lot of stamina on the bottom. If you get the stamina, you can probably push him. Mile and a quarter, I'm not so sure. You know, obviously everybody, you know, they're paying money for the Into Mischiefs, and you want them because they're runners. But, you know, you have to look at the entire pedigree when you buy sure. them, and you have to know what your goals are for horses like this. But, like I said, you know, we have a different breed of owner now. You know, they're all interchangeable. You know, we've got this, you know, Saul Kuhlman, and we've got the Bob Edwards, and we've got the Larry Best, and you got this new breed that are just, you know, spending a ton of money at the sales or part interest. Like, you know, you look at Saul Kuhlman, he's going in partnerships in yearlings and 2-year-olds and in horses of racing age. So, you know, he's putting a lot of money in his way. Bob Edwards was spending a ton of money at the sales. Larry Best is spending a ton of money at the sales. And if they think that's the best way of getting the Triple Crown horse, then, you know, good luck with them. We'll see how it turns out in a few years from now.
Even the array of owners you just laid out, they all have got different sets of priorities and approaches. And I'll reference to people to go to YouTube to watch the conversation that Seth Merrow and I had with Saul Kuhlman. And Saul explained his strategy and approach, because it does cut across a wide swath of the game. From young horses to established horses to potential for stallion prospects. I mean, his core belief and his core business plan is to actually create broodmare prospects, which is a little bit of a different idea. And that I found his response to our questions about his business acumen. I couldn't resist that. I thought it really kind of fun, and I thought a lot of information out of him from that standpoint.
I know one thing. Larry Best was certainly gung-ho on the Derby trail early this year with Instilled Regard. And he got a bit jaded when the horse lost his form.
Correct.
But came back and ran a tremendous race in the Kentucky Derby, and now we're going to see him for the first time in the Pennsylvania Derby. So it'll be interesting to see how he comes back, because he's a horse who had tremendous potential, which we saw last year in the Rosale Futurity. And then after he won the LeCompte, I was emailing with Larry Best, and because I wanted to ask him some questions about the horse. And he said he'd rather wait until after the race to talk about him because he was too nervous now. He didn't want to jinx him. I mean, he was really, really looking at this horse as a major, major Derby horse, which, you know, rightly so. And then when he came back and, he ran a disappointing race in the Risen Star, which I didn't think was quite as bad as it looked. But then he really ran the dull race in the San Diego Derby. So he didn't really, you know, pan out the way he had hoped, but, you know, listen, if this horse runs a big race in the Pennsylvania Derby, then, you know, he's got a live horse, because he did run huge in the Kentucky Derby. And he's another million dollar yearling. Or I think he was a 2-year-old in Still Regard.
In training. To me, the core essence of any of this discussion or approach, however anybody wants to go about it, each horse is an individual, and you make sure. You know, this is something people have listened to Dr. Alday on the show for 15 years. You have to gauge, you know, each horse and have a feel for what you have and where you want to get, and you go on by that. So from that standpoint, it's fine. I mean, if that is what Larry Best's in this particular circumstance, and it seems like that's probably the case because he's going on with Roe Ayton, but he wants to back off and you know come back at it in the winter as a 3-year old with Instagram.
I don't begrudge him that. I mean,
no.
like I said, sometimes a horse comes out and he does too much too soon, and that could be the case with this horse. You don't want this horse peaking as a 2-year old now. You know, in September,
right?
He might have peaked already. You know, in the
yeah, you don't know.
I mean, he was so brilliant in there. So maybe you say to yourself, "Hey, listen, we've got something really special here, and something very, very brilliant. And we don't know how far this horse is going to want to run." I think on normal cases, when you get a horse that makes the grad, you know, breaks his maiden, maybe in his second start, third start, whatever, makes a good progression, I think you want to have a 2-year-old foundation if you want to go, you know, farther with him and you want to get past the Triple Crown. But sometimes you get something freaky like this where a horse is so precocious so early that, you know, you might want to back up on him a little bit. So I don't disagree with it. I mean, I'm sure it must have been Hollendorfer who was behind this, I would think. I mean, he's been around long enough to know what he has. But it could turn out to be the right decision. We'll see. We get to maybe give this horse a little time to settle a little bit, find himself. Maybe put on a little weight, and then just get him ready and see where he goes as a 3-year old.
Absolutely. Well, and of course, at the same time, Roadster, hours later, also getting time off as well from the Baffert side. And not that Baffert doesn't have a phalanx of alternates to go forward. You mentioned Instilled Regard. I wanted to touch on that story, Steve, because, you know, you've written about those kinds of options and the campaigns of classic horses extensively. Let's talk about the Pennsylvania Derby and a really fun group that came together and really they are showing up from all points on the compass.
I love this race. I mean, to me, this race is as compelling as the Travers. The Travers didn't turn out compelling because you had the horses running basically 1-2 around the racetrack the whole way. But again, this looks like a very deep race, and it's like the old versus the new. You've got horses from early in the year that you remember from the Derby Trail, you know, the Hard Knockers. You know, you got Bravazo and you got Instilled Regard, who was on the Derby Trail. McKenzie had been on the Derby Trail early, and we don't know. We'll have to see how he's going to come back. You know, he hasn't run since the San Felipe. The Travers lost Hofberg, who I was, Hofberg and Catholic Boy. Those are my 2 3-year-olds this year. And now we've got Hofberg in this race. And it's very curious I see Bill Mott's putting the blinkers on, even though he won the Curlin by 5 lengths last time out. But Bill decided to put the blinkers on. And I tell you, his last workout, 47.2 breezing, bullet workout on the Saratoga training track in Oklahoma, fastest of 60 works. I think that those blinkers might make some kind of difference. Now let's see. I don't know if he's going to run him in blinkers. You would think if he worked him in blinkers, he would. Obviously, he's going to be running with blinkers on because that's what they have listed on there. So it'll be curious to see. And I think the blinkers are going to help this horse because I think sometimes you have a horse like this and you get tired of being victimized race after race by lack of speed. And to tell you the truth, I don't think there's a lot of speed in this race, not true speed. I mean, if you're looking at, a horse like McKenzie, he's going to be fresh, and obviously he's working sharp for Baffert. But Baffert gave him 3 consecutive 7 furlong workouts. I mean, how many trainers do you see doing that? I mean, 25-3, 24-4, and 24-4. You know, and then he gave him that half-mile blowout in 47 flat. Before that, he had the 6-4 long workout. So Baffert's put a lot of bottom into this horse. I don't think the layoff is going to bother him at all. You know, whether he's quite ready to beat these horses, I don't know, because we really don't know how good McKenzie is. But he's not. But you know, he's shown that he likes to run close to the pace. But he's not a true speed horse. And then you start looking at Mr. Freeze, who won the West Virginia Derby wire to wire. But he's not really a speed horse. You know, he had post eight and nine horse field on a bullring track, and they had to rush him out of the gate. And nobody else wanted to lead, so he got away with a 47-4 half, and he drew off, and he won easily by 8 lengths. But if you look at his other two turn races before that, he came from off the pace in both of those. One where he didn't break well and he was way, way back, and the other where he laid off the pace in the Iowa Derby. So he's not a true speed horse. So I think you're going to get a fairly slow pace here with just everybody looking at each other to see who wants to lead here. You may wind up with a horse like Axelrod. Who was very impressive winning the Smarty Jones. Now, he came from off the pace in that race and didn't exactly run fast fractions. But, you know, he showed earlier, he does have sprinting speed. At least he showed it on the grass. But he does have some kind of sprinting speed if they wanted to go to the lead with him. But, again, he's not a true front runner. There are no true front runners in the race. If you want to look at a horse who has some sprinting speed, it was the Sunland Park horse, Trigger Warning, but... You know, he's not in this class. I mean, he did run well in the Indiana Derby, setting a pace. Again, they went 47-4. Whether they'll try and he had the rail in that race, so they sent him to the lead. But most of the other races, he came from off the pace, and they're taking the blinkers off him. So I think if you want this horse to go to the lead, you don't take the blinkers off him. So I think with Hofburg with the blinkers on is going to certainly help keep him closer to the pace. And he was able to come from, you know, fairly far back in the curling because, you know, it's a restricted race, and he was tons of best. You know, he's 1-5 in that race. But, you know, the Belmont Stakes, he had to come from eighth, and the Kentucky Derby, he was running 16th, and in the Florida Derby, he was 15 lengths out of it. So, you know, he's been victimized, so it'll be interesting to see how he responds to it. And, you know, another horse that I've always been high on is King Zachary. I've written column, and he had no shot in the Travers. You know, he can't be running dead last in that race when they go 47-4, and the first two horses run 1-2 the whole way. I thought he ran a good race, come from 10th to finish 4th in that race. I think he's a very talented horse.
He's the only horse that made up any ground, Steve, in the race.
I know. So, you know, he finished a length and a half behind Bravazo. So, you know, we know what he's capable of. In the Indiana Derby, he bled a little bit in that race. So, you know, can excuse that race. And that's not his. In mile 16th at Indiana, it's not his kind of track. But he looked phenomenal in the Matt Wynn. Just from a visual standpoint, I thought he looked great in that race. And I know they had high hopes for him, you know, after he broke his maiden. But he's coming around right now. He's like curling out of a Giants Causeway mare. He's gonna just improve, and I think he could be sitting on. And he had a sneaky workout at Saratoga. He went 59 breezing and he had a bullet workout. So we know he's got speed in the morning, and he worked 59-1 workout before that. So I think Dale Romans has got him, sitting perfectly. And with him in the race and Mr. Freeze, you know, Dale's got the perfect kind of combination for running two horses. He's got a horse that's going to be on or near the lead. Mr. Freeze, you know, if he can't go wire to wire here, if he's not quite good enough to beat these horses, he could do enough to at least assure a fast enough pace for King Zachary. So, I mean, you know, Hofburg and King Zachary have always been my two horses, but it's so intriguing to see how the horses that we were latched onto early in the year and still regarding McKenzie wind up You know, and of course you got Bravazo, who's always runs his race. And, you know, you can't not too many horses you can't eliminate. I mean, Axelrod's got the race over the racetrack. He seems to be getting better right now. You know, Core Beliefs was kind of a disappointment in the Haskell, but he's got, you know, he won the Ohio Derby and he was second. He ran a good second in the Peter Pan. He was third in the San Diego Derby. So it's very hard to eliminate anybody here. Like I said, I still stick with Hofburg and King Zachary, but I'm hoping for some kind of pace in here, and it will all depend on what they do with Mr. Freeze and how sharp McKenzie is.
Hofburg does figure to I don't want to say drop out of it, but he's going to have to pass a number of these, even with the blinkers. And I will say that Errat Ortiz figures to get the kind of inside-out trip that works at this track.
Save ground early.
Yes, and then he'll kick out off the turn and rally wide. You rally wide. You don't stay inside at Philly Park. You come four or five right. wide and run them all down. So Hofburg, from that standpoint, is certainly poised for. You know, for that, be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see who's looking to save the most ground early between Hofburg and King Zachary, Corey Lannery, and somebody better let Corey know. I don't know how many times he's ridden in Philadelphia.
I can see King Zachary being widest of all, you know, swinging wide because he's going to be behind Hofburg. Like I said, I've always been a huge fan of Hofburg. Listen, part of it's personal. You know, I mean, mornings I went, you know, I mean, Belmont's Barn is about a 30-second walk from the Freeburg's house in Oklahoma. And every morning he'd pass by the house and I'd walk back to the barn with him and hang out and talk to Bill and watch the horse get washed down and you know, brought my grandson to visit him. And listen, I go back to when we went to Saratoga in May. And there was, you know, Hofburg was there, and that's when I really got to like the horse a lot, visiting him at the barn in May. So, you know, I'm not exactly looking at this from a pure handicapping standpoint, but most of it is handicapping. I just do like the horse. I mean, I can't fault him in any of his races this
sure.
year. I thought he's run great in all the races, and he just has the look of a really, really classy horse who's only going to get better. And I like to Touch Gold mare. I think Touch Gold's going to be a very good broodmare sire, and he should go really well with Tappet. You know, he got a little bit of that Tappet speed on top. You know, the middle distance speed with the Touch Gold stamina on the bottom, and Touch Gold also had, you know, stamina speed. So, pedigree wise, looks wise, attitude wise, and I thought he was very impressive when he won the Curlin. In fact, the horse that he beat in the Curlin, Nicodemus, is owned by the
right.
Freedbergs, and they were very. He had been trained by Rudy Brousset, and he was very, very high on this horse. And Linda Rice loved the horse. Unfortunately, he got hurt after this race, so we never got a chance to see how good he is. But I saw him school at the gate, and he's a beautiful horse, very classy looking horse. So. So, you know, Hofburg beat him by five lengths, but Nicodemus finished nine lengths ahead of the third horse in that Curlin. So
right.
I think he beat a really good horse, and he got a triple-digit buyer.
Now, and this is with the frustration of Hofburg spiking a fever and not being able to compete.
Sure.
In the Travers, this is his Travers. I mean, this is his big opportunity, last chance at a Grade One with 3-year-old company before, you know, turning toward Breeders' Cup. So it feels like, I mean, if you're a believer in that kind of, you know, concept of whose turn it is, I mean, this is really Hofburg's race. It to some degree it. You start there, and then try to figure out who, you know, who, either to feather in or, you know, who to tie up with him. And the McKinsey equation, I think, is very hard for some people, Steve, because to pick up right here, going a mile and an eighth after being away since March is a tall order, even for Baffert. And I know, as it happens, Ellis Starb this week has been using some of the Stats Racelens numbers, and it's a limited set of races. But Baffert with five opportunities under these same circumstances, coming back in a graded stake off of this layoff, is won three times. But it to me, it's going to be very hard to. I don't. As much as we respect Baffert, and he certainly knows what kind of a horse and what kind of an effort it's going to take to win a Pennsylvania Derby, this feels like a tall order to me.
Well, not only that, not every horse likes Parks.
I mean, that's true too.
It's a quirky track. Like you said, you got to be in the right spot, and you have to really take to the track. Look what happened when California Chrome came back.
Yep.
California Chrome, you know, came back after his debacle in Belmont Stakes. Everybody was all excited. Wow, got California Chrome going. It didn't pick his feet up on that racetrack.
Nope.
And then came back and got beat a neck or so in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He just didn't, some horses just don't like this racetrack. You know, and what you say about whose turn it is. I look at it this way. I was disappointed when Hofburg got sick. But it opened the door for my main horse, Catholic Boy, to win the race, and now it's Hofburg's time. So I'm looking for a Catholic Boy Hofburg exacta, and then can root for both of them going into the to the Breeders' Cup Classic. They will be the two main 3-year-old representatives. But again, we want to see how some of these other horses are doing here. But if McKinsey runs a big race here, doesn't have to win. But he runs a big race. You know, it could set him up. You know, it's a tall order to come back in the Breeders' Cup Classic off just a one start since March. But it's been a strange year for 3-year-olds, considering the fact that we're talking about all these horses, and we did have a Triple Crown winner this year who's sort of have made everything sort of askew in the way he did it. We're not used to seeing anything like that. And you got to remember too, by the way, is that one of my favorite things is that when McKinsey was at his peak early in the year, it was after the Sham, in between the Sham and the San Felipe, after he had won the Sham easily, and he was Baffert's big horse, of course, and Baffert also had Salamini, and he had the horse that won it, Marino, who had won at Oaklawn Park when he, went there. I mean, he was loaded with horses. And then he walks into Rick Hammerly's office one morning on February 17th or whatever it was. And he tells me, he says, look, the 2-year-old race you got, he says, you have to make sure that race fills. He said, because I have a first-time starter in there that I can win the Kentucky Derby with. Rick Hammerly said, what? Yep. It turned out I was justified. And the race was February 18th, and the horse hadn't even started. And Baffert already had three solid Derby horses at that point, yet he tells Rick Hammerly that he can win the Kentucky Derby with a horse that had never run before. So that just shows you what they thought of Justify before he even made it to the starting gate.
Yeah, the story with Lenny always makes me smile. You want to come see the Derby winner, and he said, okay. He thought, okay, we'll go see McKinsey. Nope, that's wrong horse. That's not the Derby winner. And the one thing when you look at these and I'm just staying focused on Baffert in the races when he's won the Pennsylvania Derby versus coming with a horse that didn't run as well, and Cupid comes to mind a couple of years ago, who ran And granted, he was 6-1, but he showed up with Cupid, and he didn't run.
He was a strange race. Cupid. You never know what you were going to get with him.
Yeah, that's true.
He was way at the top or way at the bottom. And then you look at last year with West Coast. I mean, listen, West Coast had he was so impressive.
He was in form.
Travers, so.
Yep. No, he was in good form, and those are the ones of recent. The last 3-4 years that you can use as going back another year. Let me see. No, he didn't have anybody. Went to Honor and Serve one. He didn't have anybody in there that year. So it's a tough equation for me about McKenzie. And I certainly was a fan, early in the year. Axelrod is the horse that we're sort of glossing over that has been a now horse. And
I wonder if he's named after Bobby Axelrod. I don't know if you ever watched the show Billions.
I do not watch Billions. Who's the character? Who's the Sol Cuman? There's a Sol Cuman character in there,
Yeah, that's Bobby Axelrod.
Okay, I wasn't sure there you go. All right. Steve,
he could be any kind, he was a good horse at San Anita. It took him a while to really find himself. McCarthy kept him in allowance races for quite a while. And then I thought he ran a good second to draft pick, who was a really nice horse, beat Salomini in the Affirmed, I thought he ran a tremendous race in the Indiana Derby. There wasn't much in there. He beat Trigger Warning, who's an okay horse. Nothing
he's
to
nice.
Rave about.
Yep,
but he just got
right.
up to beat him. But then now he's got a race over the Parks racetrack in the Smarty Jones, and he beat a nice horse in Diamond King, Takesha's King horse, who they've always been high on, and he's another horse. And not only that, but he's another one of those horses that's swung wide and. Came from the outside. He just ran right by everybody.
Joe knows how to win there, too.
We don't know about Mr. Freeze.
It's fun. It's going to be it's a terrific card. A fun afternoon. Anybody beating Monomoy Girl or not? It's Separation of Powers, Midnight Bizu.
It's a race where there's not a heck of a lot of speed in there.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have to go to the lead with her. The only one that can run with her is that Jump Rider, but she's not classy enough. She's a former claimer. She runs 47s and changes and 48s and changes. I tell you, the horse that intrigues me in that race is Separation of Powers. She was a terrific 2-year-old, and I like she won the Frisette very impressively. And the British Cup Juvenile Fillies, forget about it. She broke from the 13th post in that race. Didn't run until July of this year. Came back in the Candy Ride. Was flying at the end of that race. First start back, going 6.5 furlongs, against a pretty good field. Had a terrible, terrible trip. Bad start, bad trip in there. And she was flying at the end of that race. Finished a really good fourth. Then came back and won the test, beating a very good filly in Mere Mischief. And she gets 7 pounds from Monomoy Girl. So she's so if anybody can beat Monomoy Girl, I think it's a horse that's really sharp right now. I don't know if it's a horse that's been running in distance races, but a horse that's sharp, who's already shown that she could win at a mile and ran well enough, like I said, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies at 1/16. But, another Chad Brown horse, and she kind of intrigues me. And like I said, getting 7 pounds from Monomoy Girl, if she's ever going to beat her, this might be the opportunity. And you know what? A lot of people are going to forget about Midnight Bisu. She's a lot better filly. She was up against it in a lot of those races. She was pace dependent in those races in the Alabama. She was not going to win coming from 8 lengths back. So she's the kind of filly that might like this track. I mean, she's got the back class. If she can run anything close to what she ran in the Mother Goose, I know she didn't beat much in there, but the ease which she did it, and there was no way in the world she was going to beat Monomoy Girl in the coaching club playing her game. you know, going 48 and change and 112 and change, and she's sitting right behind her in the race, you know, which is not really her style. She does have stalking speed, but I wouldn't exactly throw her out. But in Wonder Goddard, I don't, you know, it's hard to tell how she's going to bounce back off the Travers. It's a terrific field. But Monomoy Girl obviously is the standout here. But, you know, if you're looking for a price, you know, Separation of Powers at 10-1, getting the weight and coming off the sprint, she might be kind of intriguing in here.
It's a terrific card. The gallant Bob as well.
That's
for
a good
the
race
sprinters. Yep. Firenze Fire going to try to go six so that the
hey,
boys
really,
can make a decision.
Him up. Here's a horse that's a pure miler. And then he shortened him up to 7. Now he shortened him up to 6. They're obviously looking to run this horse in the Breeders' Cup Sprint and not the Dirt Mile, unless they're. I mean, I don't know why he would run here and not in the Kelso. But
well, they were going both directions. They were both they and I happened to have run in after the on Travers Day. Happened to run into Lombardi and Jason Service, and you know, asked them, "What do you think?" and They were very much up in the air, and I'm sure that they're doing this to see if, you know, how he reacts getting all the way back to three quarters, and from there they can, you know, then they can make a decision. I mean, they can always go toward the Kelso. I mean, that toward the Breeders' Cup mile, the one turn mile, which we know he likes, but. The biggest part of the decision for them, Steve, and this I thought was very smart on Ron Lombardi's part, was the prestige aspect. There's a lot more stallion prestige, and he's really got to enhance his resume. He's, you know, he's by an obscure enough stallion when it comes to Poseidon's Warrior that there's not a lot of appeal. So if he can win something like the sprint, that's got to be more distinguishing than winning the Dirt Mile. So I think they want to just get a read, and it feels like if you're gonna go toward the sprint, this is the year to do it.
But you got to remember, by the way, the sprint, the mile, the Dirt Mile this year is one turn, so it's a true
right.
mile. So I think
which is good for him.
The Dirt Mile this year will hold more value as a stallion than they would
maybe
if it was at Santa Anita when they have their phony mile. You know, where you got which is. To me, you know, much cheaper race. They have to go two-turn mile is not a true mile race. And I don't think breeders are going to be interested in horses that win the Dirt Mile going two turns. It's like winning a mile in a 16th race. There's no difference. But if you can win a mile, flat mile at Churchill Downs, that's a different story. I think that will enhance a horse's value. But listen,
we
know the horse is precocious. He broke his maiden at 5 furlongs first time out, and he won the Sanford. If he can get back to that sprint form, but you know he's a horse that's going to need pace in front of him. But,
he's won two one turn miles at 2 and a 3, and when it came, you know, to the Dwyer and going back to the Champagne, it agreed. But I don't disagree with this idea. I've seen, you know, it's been.
I'm not
a while
saying I disagree with it. I was just surprised at it. I would think that, you know, unless they didn't want to run him, you know, they'd rather run him against 3-year-olds. But the way I look at it, I was just surprised by it. It could turn out to be the right decision.
We'll see. It's a great card.
Let's put it this way: if he runs, he doesn't have to win this race. But if he's closing in here, closing really fast and. You know, and run second to you know, to a really fast horse. You know, Seven Trumpets is getting good right now, and I think Engage is ready to finally put it all together. You know, you got some pretty fast horses in here. If he runs a fast closing second, then they have the option of going in either race, going in the Dirt Mile or the sprint, depending on how each race shapes up. Maybe a sprint is going to have, you know, if you have Imperial in there. You know, you can have, you know, there's going to be a lot of blazing speed in the sprint this year.
Mm-hmm.
So at least it'll give him an option. If they go with the Kelso and he runs there, they're pretty much committed to the Dirt Mile. They're not going to run him in a sprint off of that. So, I mean, I can see that way of thinking if they're looking to have an option of whether going Dirt Mile or sprint.
Well, and then there is another consideration. Not only the value of the races is the same, $300,000 each, and you're facing elders in the Kelso versus 3-year old exclusive in the Gallant Bob. So there's maybe a couple more pros to running in Philly than coming up to Belmont.
Yeah, so that, we'll see how it shapes up. Like I said, you can get a horse like War Giant that's just going to go out there and just go wire to wire and just run everybody off their feet. If you run second to a horse like that who goes wire to wire, that's fine. As far as looking ahead to what you want to do with them in the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Steve, this is one of the first or the next big weekends. It seems like every weekend's a big weekend at this point after the Woodbine Mile action this past week and the two-year-olds as well. Got a terrific card on tap in Philadelphia. Looking forward to being there.
And Myra spread out all their races this year.
A little bit.
Not only over two weekends, but over Saturdays and Sundays. So you don't have that big mega card. But each card is a terrific card in itself. Instead of having seven stakes on one card, you've got three and three and two and it's got kind of 4-3-2. It's kind of interesting the way they spread them out, because even the following weekend, when they broke up the Champagne on the Saturday and the Frisette on Sunday, and if I remember correctly, I think the Flower Bowl is a Sunday too this year, right?
The Flower Bowl is with the Frisette on Sunday,
the
Futurity.
Right. So they've split those races up. So it's good. It's back to closer to the way it used to be, rather than have the one big fall championship card, the Breeders' Cup preview card, as they say. Here it's spread out over, spread out over an extra week, too, because remember the Kelso used to be run as part of that mega card as well. So they spread it out even over a 3-week period, and also over Saturdays and Sundays.
Well, and actually, because of Columbus Day, you've actually got a 3-day stake weekend at Belmont.
Right, exactly.
That first weekend, and should make for a very fun. In fact, it wouldn't be kind of might be fun to be down there for all 3 days. The Beldame, here it is. The Beldame. The Turf Sprint, the Champagne, and the Hill Prince are on Saturday. Then on Sunday, the Flower Bowl, the Frisette, and the Futurity. And then on Monday, the Knickerbocker and the Matron.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. I like the
it's
way
nice.
You did it. It's unfortunate that, the Beldame obviously suffered with a late injury. And I don't know if anybody can beat Diversify in the Gold Cup. I don't know how competitive those two big races are going to be now. But we'll see. Somebody will show up.
Well, and on that topic, you've got. Let me give everybody that agenda next Saturday: the Jockey Club, the Joe Hirsch, the Vosburgh, and the Pilgrim on Saturday, and then you come back on Sunday with the Miss Grillo and the Temperance Hill.
Temperance Hill's interesting too. I like the conditions of that race. Even though they don't have a Breeders' Cup Marathon anymore, I like the fact that they have these horses going long again.
Yeah, agreed.
And the Vosburgh is, I'd just be curious to see Imperial Hint coming back again after that absolutely monster race he ran at Saratoga. We'll see how good he is. He can come back and run another big race like that in Vosburgh.
The little sprinter that could, Imperial Hint, Louis Carvajal, and that same weekend is the First Lady and the Shadwell and the Breeders' Futurity, etc. at Keeneland, and Santa Anita's got its own set. The next 3 weeks,
don't forget,
just crazy.
Don't forget Mind Your Biscuits in the Lucas Classic.
That's right. You got that.
Actually, Imperial Hint. And Mind Your Biscuits were like two or three stalls apart. It was really cool. So, by the way, the most melodic voice, that accent.
He does. He's got a great
voice. The way he describes, I could listen to Chris for hours and hours just listen to him talk. It's just, I actually feel like you're back in France. I feel like I'm talking to a French trainer at Chantilly in the morning, you know, with the, it's just great. It's such a melodic tone to his voice. And I'm not just saying just because he has a French accent, but it's a really melodic French accent, which is as good as it gets.
Yeah, and he's swinging into action too. Clement these next couple of weekends, and he was heating up as the summer went on, as it happens. Steve, this was great, and looking forward to, we'll have plenty to recap and plenty to preview next Thursday.
Yep, should be a lot of fun.
No doubt, no doubt. We're going to pull up and take our last break of the morning and start to get ready for the race day, which, of course, the Lonesome Glory and Mrs. Packer, Doris Packer, who was the mother of Blanche Stone, and she made a blackout cake that was as close to Ebinger's as you could get. It was that pale green box.
Was it as rich?
Absolutely. Unbelievable. Mrs. Packer's blackout cake. It wouldn't be a Haskin visit if we didn't spin out of control.
Talk about food. The thing is, you got me talking racing, and I went way over what I was supposed to go over anyway.
That's right. You said you had to leave at 11:30. You were going somewhere.
I know. So that'll have to be put off. So. As my wife is in the next room saying, "What the hell is he doing already? Get off the phone!"
And now I've only got a minute or two to kill, so I might as well stay here and close out the show. And since we're on this topic of the William Entiman today, the memorial goes off first. And did you see the tweet I put out yesterday of for Lonesome Glory to thelonesomeglory.com?
No, I didn't. What did you say?
Well, just go take a look. Go to lonesomeglory.com.
I'm not on Twitter anymore.
Well, that's true. But lonesomeglory.com, and go through the albums that Millers.
Did I ever tell you about our morning? Me, Joan, and Mandy. Our morning was Lonesome Glory.
No.
We went to Bruce Smith's yard. And to go see Lonesome Glory, I wanted to do a story on him. His yard was right next to Jonathan Shepherd's. And Lonesome Glory would always do his gallops over into Jonathan Shepherd's area, you know, over his gallops. So I spent the whole morning with Lonesome Glory, and we got in Bruce's car, the three of us, and we drove up over the hills with Lonesome Glory running right alongside our car the entire way. And it was like, wow, this was, that area in Pennsylvania was so gorgeous. It's all horse country. And all the steeplechase guys have their yards there. And just driving along. Was it Bruce? Wait a second. Bruce Miller.
Bruce Miller.
Not Smith. What am I talking about? Smith. Bruce I'm Miller. Thinking of Buffalo Bills tackle. I will say that didn't sound right. Not Bruce Smith. Bruce Miller, I mean. So the three of us are in Bruce's car, just driving along up over the hills and driving along and just have Lonesome Glory running right alongside the car the whole way, and I'm taking pictures of him, and I got pictures of Mandy with him. What a grand horse to be around. I tell you, I miss those old steeplechase champions when people knew who they were. I mean, I think he was a champion 5 years in a row, I think it was.
Not in a row, but five times, yes.
Well, five times. And he went to Europe and made his mark there. And I remember falling in love with Flatterer and Zacchio. I remember all. And by the way, was it you that was talking about Happy Intellectual?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't tell you a story, by the way, before we quickly squeezed this in. When I was in France in 1974, and I remember Happy Intellectual. He ran in the world. He ran in Olympic Stakes. He ran in the Woodward Stakes. I remember seeing him. We're in France, 1974. I'm at a racetrack called Angien, which is like a old, sort of cheap jump track. And I'm looking at the program, which is a sheet of paper, and I see a horse called Happy Intellectual running. And I said, wait a second, this can't be the same horse. And then I look at the breeding. I see Wolfram, bred by, you know, Mrs. Ogden Phipps. I go, whoa. Mm-hmm. I said, that is what happened to this horse. And then he runs in the race, and he finishes second. And he was like 40 to 1. And he runs second. It was a flat race, actually. And he runs second. Next thing I know, he's back in the United States again, and he's winning the big races year after year, the turf riders. I mean, it was unbelievable seeing this horse at Angien in France. I remember when you were talking about him. I said I was freaking out remembering that about Happy Intellectual. I miss those old jumpers. I really do. We don't pay that much attention to them anymore.
Well, we pay attention here because we love it and always have. And Lonesome Glory was, in fact, he's probably the first, I suppose, the first of the jumpers that I, you know, really identified. And yeah, when you get to see them for as long as a horse like that campaigned, that adds to the appeal. I mean, you know, we get frustrated because, you know, the colts and horses have to retire to go to stud service, but a horse like him, you get to see for 3, 4, oh, yeah, 5, 6 years, 7 years in a row. I mean, he campaigned for like 7 or 8 seasons.
Yeah, it just Flatterer. He was the best I ever saw.
Flatterer was unbelievable. Well, Flatterer. go to lonesomeglory.com. You've run us right to the, for somebody that had to get off the air at 11:30, you're going to make it till noon.
Yes, well, yeah, as Richie Ricardo would say, I got some splaining to do.
And I'm glad that a girl, Lucy. Go, Andrew Hawkins, Milt Toby. Milt Toby's got a new book, by the way, about Shurgard, which I know you're going to want to read.
Oh, really? Yeah, he writes great books.
Tony Black and Ashley Burness and Steve Askin, who he didn't overstay his welcome. He just overstayed.
I didn't overstay. I stayed over.
We got to go. Talk to you tomorrow. Weekend preview. Big weekend preview tomorrow.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.